I think what you're getting at the end of the day is we value our employees. I mean, employees that do great work. If our government client says, hey, such and such is doing a great job, and let me just tell you what kind of great job they're doing, what we hand out is what we call core value awards. So that award's not just a piece of paper with words on it. It's also, you know, they get a bonus in their next paycheck for that. So, we reward our employees for good work.
Welcome to Security Cleared Jobs, Who's Hiring and How, the podcast for cleared professionals looking for new opportunities and career advice. We go behind the scenes with recruiters and hiring managers from leading cleared employers to uncover the information you need to make a smart career move. Get ready for insights from this week's guest and your hosts, Kathleen Smith and Rachel Bozeman.
Well, hello, podcast world, and hello, Rachel. It's so good to see you again. And we have our new mugs, don't we?
We do. We are fancy schmancy. I'm not telling you what's in mine.
No, neither am I. So, how are things with you, Rachel, today?
You know, I can't complain, and I also cannot complain that we have our friend, Mr. Thomas Foos, with us to talk a little bit about, I don't know, careers, maybe Armada. Excited you're here.
Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Before we get to our questions, I actually saw in our statistics that more than 75% of our listeners are listening on their mobile devices. So if you're on your mobile device and you're listening to our podcast, be sure that you're walking safely, driving safely, and taking care of yourself because we want you to continue listening to us.
For those people on their mobile phones that are walking around and listening, make sure you're maintaining situational awareness, okay? Because people have a tendency to get distracted when they're on their phones. I tell my daughter that all the time. She lives in D.C., and she always calls when she's heading home from work, and she's always talking on the phone. And I said, honey, you got to maintain your situational awareness, you know, because it's usually dark outside. So I'll just start off with that.
Awesome. So with that, Rachel, let's kick it off. What do we want to ask Tom today?
There's so many things, but I think it's important to start at the beginning. So Tom, we would love, if you don't mind, sharing a little bit about your journey that led you from the Marines to being a leader at Armada.
I was in the Marine Corps. I served 4 years active duty initially and then joined the reserves and then did another year of active duty. During the Global War on Terror, I was activated one time for a year. My business partner, Jeff Bedracki, was also, he's an Air Force veteran. He was a pararescue jumper in the Air Force, which is their elite, if you will, their special operations folks within the Air Force. So after I got off, out of the military, off of active duty in the Marine Corps, I did some government jobs in the state of Ohio and then jumped at an opportunity to get on with a company, a Fortune 19 company that's headquartered out of the Columbus area. And that is where I met my partner, Jeff Bedracki. We were both global security managers for Cardinal Health, which at the time was a Fortune 19 company. It was during that time that Jeff and I, during many trips that we did together, came up with the idea of starting Armada. And we did that in 2005 with the idea that, you know, on the private sector side, we would be providing security consulting services, security program development, helping people with technologies, helping people with training to help improve their security posture within their organizations. And early on, we did a lot of work with corporations. We did a lot of work with small, medium, and large businesses, K-12 schools, higher education, state and local governments, and started doing work with the federal government as a subcontractor after Katrina. There was a lot of disaster preparedness planning that went on and exercises and things like that because Katrina really exposed some vulnerabilities and flaws that we had in our disaster preparedness system. And we were blessed enough to have some very good emergency management disaster preparedness professionals that did work with us. You fast forward a little bit, and in 2011, 2012, we started priming our own federal contracts. From that point on, from 2011, 2012, incrementally, we've grown in terms of winning contracts that either as a prime or as a subcontractor. We still subcontract to other firms. As we stand now, I think we are priming 9 federal contracts, and we are a subcontractor on 3 different contracts. We're supporting our federal government on about 12 different contracts right now.
That's all great. And, you know, it's always wonderful to hear also your journey, because we have so many of our listeners who are transitioning military sort of, yes, you can go out and, you know, be part of an entrepreneurial venture. You can do something different than having somebody watching your back. You can go out on your own. So really love hearing that story. So in our pre-call, you talked a little bit about your company being very specialized security-related services. So do you want to drill down into that?
I think the specialized, in my opinion, comes from the positions that we fill and the services that we provide require people to have certain security clearances, because the majority of our clients are federal clients and they have very distinct needs. Almost 100% of the time when we fulfill positions in the federal government, they need to have some type of security clearance. Typically, in the clients that we have and the type of contracts that we have, they have to have a TS or above. They need to have certain certifications. They need to have certain experience. Some of them require, you know, need to be able to work in SCIFs. So that's what I call it's very specialized in the information security area, program security officer, physical security specialist, or engineers and things of that nature. But they got to fit in terms of what that agency is looking for. The federal government has very specific things that they want, and we give it to them.
Well, Tom, I knew we would be quick friends because I learned a couple things about you. You're the Ohio State fan, and I'm a Joe Burrow fan, being from Louisiana, so I speak yes. Katrina very well as well. So we can definitely be friends. And speaking of friends—
Wish he was the Browns quarterback.
You know what? We were friends. We were friends for a second there. I have converted to a Bengals fan from a Saints fan just for Joe Burrow, but you know.
I was rooting for him. Trust me, I was rooting for him against Kansas City. I really was. At the end of the day, he's from Ohio, so you got to root for him. So,
absolutely. Anyway. Absolutely.
Sorry about that.
Hey, you know, there's always good times to talk about Joe Burrow. There's never a bad time to talk about football. But there's also great times to talk about, and you kind of alluded to it a little bit about the different, you know, the engineers, the program engineers, some of the TS clearances, working in SCIFs, kind of touched on it. But is there any other skill set you want to dig into a little bit more? And maybe where are these positions located?
Information system security officers, information system security engineers are very much in demand right now, not by just us, but by many, many other entities, you know, who are either doing work with the federal government or not doing work with the federal government. I mean, it's across the board. The need for good cybersecurity, information system security people is very, very acute. Other positions that we have, admin positions. I don't know if you're familiar with the term personnel security, which are the people that assist, you know, people that are being processed for background investigations. They do a lot of the, you know, kind of the, if you will, grunt work, so to speak, to get those SF-86s and all those forms filled out the right way so their clearances can get processed and adjudicated. Very much involved with the industrial security area, program protection. We actually do employ some CBRN, chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear, SMEs as well, full-time. Many of our folks work in SCIFs. And I think everybody probably knows what a SCIF is, but it's a sensitive compartmentalized information facility. You know, to work in there, you know, you have to be cleared at the highest level. You have to have a TS-SCI clearance. You know, some of our folks are supporting special access programs and things of that nature. So, but positions that are the most challenging for us at times are those information system security people, because they are in such demand kind of across all the different spectrums, market sectors in the United States. And we're always looking for that kind of talent, if that makes any sense.
It really does. I mean, cybersecurity, information security has grown so much. I've been in this industry for over 20 years. Yes, there's some gray hairs in there. And it's interesting that it was all called information assurance or information security at one time. And then all of a sudden we came up with this term cybersecurity and it just sort of exploded.
You know, one of the things that was really interesting is, I retired from the Marine Corps in 2011 out of the reserves. You know, back then, the domains of warfare that we were engaged in, you know, were air, land, and sea. Mm-hmm. Okay. When I first came up in the late 1980s, early 1990s, we talked about the air, land, and sea. Now we talk air, land, sea, space, and cyber.
Right.
Okay. There's been two more domains added to our, if you will, suite of domains that we have to engage in warfare. And, you know, let's face it, all branches of the federal government are engaged in this cyber fight. I mean, I would tell a young person today, if you have any proclivity towards, you know, computers, information systems, and things of that, go into the security field. It can be very lucrative for you, and it's never going away. It's if you have a good work ethic, and you go and get whether you go learn your craft at a university, going to college, or you go in the military and you become a cybersecurity expert or something like that, I got to tell you right now, you're going to be employable. I would be remiss if I didn't mention also, like from a hiring needs standpoint, that we do probably over 30 plus people that do personnel security. What I mentioned, the background investigation support type of task that we have. That's a very, in a way, a transient or high turnover kind of area as well. Believe it or not, COVID really helped us in that area. Because many of those positions used to be, hey, you got to be in the office, paper-based system, you know, kind of thing like that. When COVID hit and they sent everybody home, essentially, the government, good on them, man, they pivoted really great.
Yeah, they really did.
And for a lot of these folks, it really helped them with their home situation and things of that nature. It helped us from a retention standpoint. If there's one positive that kind of came out of COVID is it made a lot of people realize that you can be very productive at home.
Right.
And you can get the job done at home. Now, you obviously know the hybrid mm-hmm. work models that are coming out and things of that nature. So I'm sorry if I ahead of this or not, but that's...
This is a conversation. Happy to hear more about that. But it did remind me that we should ask, where are all your positions located? I mean, are they centrally located in one particular area, or do you have some that are hybrid?
We got people all over the place. The majority of our employees are in the DC area. It's good because when I go to DC about once every month and a half to 2 months to visit employees, to visit clients, we get a chance to see them. It used to be 2 years ago or 3 years ago prior to COVID, if I went and visited some of our largest clients, you'd see them in the office. Now you're lucky if you see a handful in the office of employees because of the hybrid model. But DC is the biggest area, biggest concentration of our employees. We have several employees down in the Florida area. One of our clients is, if you will, their headquarters is in the Hurlburt Field, the panhandle of Florida. We've got several in California, several in Texas, some in Missouri. Then we got onesie-twosies in Missouri, Utah, one out in Hawaii, and then we have one out in Iwakuni, Marine Corps Air Station, Iwakuni, Japan. We got people all over the globe. New Mexico, I forgot New Mexico, supporting a client out of Kirtland Air Force Base. So we're all over the country.
Are most of your positions, do they still fall in that hybrid or remote arena? Or how is that working for y'all right now?
I'd probably say 50-50 or maybe 60-40 hybrid. The 40%, if you will, whatever that percentage is that still has to go in the office, so those are the people that have the jobs in the SCIFs or work in the very sensitive areas. Now, there are some tasks that they can do remotely, and you know, if they need a day where they need to telework for whatever reason, and we work with our government clients all the time to identify those times so that where they can get work done at home, and if they have a situation with their child or something like that, that's a good option to have. But the majority of our employees now work under the hybrid, working from home, coming to the office once every week or two, you know, one time per pay period or something like that.
So speaking of flexibility and, you know, the pivoting that happened after COVID, I understand you have this really great story that talks about how you were able to pivot and shows the flexibility of a smaller company, because that's one thing I don't think people understand is that there is flexibility with a smaller company, and mm-hmm. sometimes you don't have that with a larger company. So care to share more about your story?
Yeah. We as an organization, we're always equipped to be able to operate from anywhere. You know, we always had a philosophy, especially with a lot of our consultants, the security or emergency preparedness consultants. If they have a laptop and a cell phone, they can pretty much work and get their work, you know, job done anywhere, except for the times where they need to do in-person collaboration because that's what the customer called for. But the pivot, you know, it was February/March of 2020. They started sending people home. we just kind of said, okay, we know how to do this. And almost most of the people that we had computers at home. The government gave us the means by which we can make sure that the computers that they had at home could be secured in such a way that they could do official business. And for those who didn't, we quickly got them laptops, we Armada, and they started operating from home within several days and were productive, got the job done, and our client couldn't have been happier that the transition was relatively seamless. Again, it's reflective right now is that they're okay with the hybrid flexible model now. They don't see a need to bring everybody back. But I attribute our flexibility to the fact that we kind of operated that way anyway. And we talked to our client on several different occasions of offering telework prior to COVID. And they said, well, we're going to have to wait till the new contract because, recompete to put that requirement in there because of contracting reasons and all that kind of stuff. And that's, we had a Department of State work that did the same thing. They were operating predominantly from home, rarely coming in. You've probably heard this a million different times. The world's a lot different from a workplace environment today than it is, March of 2020, late February, early March of 2020.
Absolutely. And it's a whole different world, isn't it?
It is.
It's a fun, brave new world out there. We would love for you to do a little sales pitch on us. So I know an important factor for anybody considering a career, especially our cleared professionals, is really understanding kind of the company philosophy and the culture and what's in it for them. So here is your chance to play Salesman of the Year. We would love for you to sell why Armada is the place where people want to plant roots.
Well, I will say this. I mean, sometimes bigger is not always better. Okay, in terms of going to companies, I try to, as the president of the company and my vice presidents, we try to, and my partner, try to get out to our client sites as often as we possibly can and meet our employees and meet with our clients and kind of get to know them, not just as an employee, but also who they are as a person and things of that nature. And I think you get that with a small company. We're small. We're over 90 full-time equivalent employees right now. So, small is kind of a relative term. But I feel like we're tight-knit. Why Armada, too, is I would say our clients. We've got some great clients. They're good people. I think on every contract that we have, they truly try to make the contractors feel like they're part of the bigger, kind of government contractor team, if you will. And we've had people leave, for instance, on our DOJ contract, we had a very senior guy get offered $15,000 more a year. He went and he took that job. And within a month, he said, I want to come back. He liked us as a company, but he also liked our client. Okay. Because the client, fostered that cohesive relationship between not just the government team, so to speak, but the government and contractor team. So I will throw that out there. It's not just us as a company, but it's also the great clients that we have. We do, for some people, particularly some of our more critical positions, we do sign-on bonuses. And for our employees, if they bring us very good people that, get hired within a, kind of a reasonable amount of time, a week, 2 weeks, whatever, 3 weeks, they get referral bonuses, because we, time is money. In many of our contracts, if we don't have a person fulfilling a particular position, we're losing money. So we incentivize our employees to bring their friends or bring people that they know that are professional, that can be good employees, to us. And we are very competitive from a medical standpoint, from a benefits standpoint. We offer essentially the same, healthcare, medical benefits, 401ks and things of that nature that the big companies do. And I think what you're getting at the end of the day is we value our employees. I mean, employees that do great work, particularly ones who get recognized by our government clients. If our government client says, hey, such and such is doing a great job, and let me just tell you what kind of great job they're doing, what we hand out is what we call core value awards. And when our client basically lets us know that, hey, we really value this person and this is why, they're going to get an award from us. And that award's not just a piece of paper with words on it. It's also, they get a bonus in their next paycheck for that. So, we reward our employees for good work. We're not going anywhere. And, you know, so that people can set, like somebody said there, set up some roots and be with us, you know, for many, many years. So we value that.
Sounds awesome. We would love, if you don't mind sharing just a little bit of that advice for these cleared professionals that are making that transition. You know, what are some tips and tricks in their job search that you would recommend for them?
If you're coming in the government space, a lot of times their resumes and their experience can crosswalk relatively effectively to jobs that are in the contracting world, or particularly if you're lucky enough, veterans that are going to support a DOD-related, you know, contract or something of that nature. Their qualifications, their clearance, and everything like that will crosswalk very, very well. Some of the best advice I can give you is really listen to your transition people when you're going through your transition programs and things of that nature. Writing your resume and ensuring your resume is kind of doesn't speak so military, but speaks a little bit more civilian. There was a book when I was transitioning out of the Marine Corps in 1993 to my civilian world. There was a book called Does Your Resume Wear Combat Boots? It was actually pretty good. They gave tips, you know, in terms of how this is my experience in the military or in the Marine Corps. This is how you need to write to it if you're pursuing work in the private sector. So, you know, writing that resume to real world kind of civilian tasks or jobs and things of that nature. Practice, if you're going to go interview and things of that nature, practice interviewing. Get with somebody that knows kind of how interviews are conducted and things of that nature, whether they be a friend or somebody, you know, that's in business, and have them do a interview practice with you. Different branches of service transition differently. The Marine Corps, I can tell you, it's a little bit of a paradigm shift and a cultural shift when people get out of the Marine Corps to come to the civilian world. I know it was interesting for me when I got introduced to, you know, people who had not served in the military, and my mannerisms, my language, my, you know, if you will, kind of like how I conducted myself was very different, and people could tell. I'm not trying to say change who you are from what you, you know, what, how the military maybe developed you a little bit like that, but learn how to speak the language of the people that you're going to go work with, in both written resume and how you interview. Because believe it or not, I think there's people out in the civilian world that might not quite understand how the military works or how people in the Department of Defense work. The fact that they are part of a team, the fact that the humor can be a little bit different, you know, our language is different and everything like that, but the job is different in most cases. And so the more that you can kind of assimilate back into the civilian world or things of that nature, slowly but surely, it's not going to happen overnight, but a lot of that can be done through preparation, through interview practicing, and making sure your resume is crosswalking to civilian tasks.
That is just amazing and so helpful. How do our listeners get in touch with you?
Well, we have a website, www.armadausa.com. So it's probably the best way to get in touch with us.
Awesome. Tom, thanks so much for being here today. Anu is also very excited that you were here today. I don't know if it's you or the post office that just arrived, but one of those two has got her very excited. But just truly appreciate you spending some time with us.
Well, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
So being a veteran-owned firm and myself being a military spouse, I always love talking to somebody from the military, but I have a special place in my heart for Marines. So it was great having Tom, a Marine, on our podcast because he had so many interesting things to say. Rachel, what did you like about Tom's interview?
I agree. And I love watching you get so excited when we have Marines on here as well. It's a win-win all the way around. But really appreciated the heartfelt advice that Tom was able to provide to those that are out there looking for jobs and how to make sure that, you know, it's not changing who you are or all of the goodness that's been instilled into you, you know, throughout your military service, but just learning your audience and how to fit in with there. I thought that was great advice. And I'm certainly going to go check out the book that he recommended about resumes wear combat boots. So excited about that one.
So thanks so much for hanging out with me today, Rachel. I always love our time together.
And Tom was really a very inspirational guest today. So please remember to subscribe, rate, review, show us some love so that you can come back and listen to us again. Bye-bye.
Bye.